Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is sponsored by ChampionshipBreeders.com. Championship Breeders is a proud supporter of the American Kennel Club, our specialty and all breed clubs, our dog sports, and the gifts of therapy and service from our canine companions. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. Pat Trotter, thank you so much for joining us. I'm really excited. Would you be willing to give our audience just a little bit of background about your time in dogs?
Is Tom the operative word here?
Time? Yes.
Okay, we're going to go back to the late 40s.
There you go.
It was the heyday of the Cocker Spaniel, and I was a kid in love with all kinds of dogs, and this lady that bred Cockers very successfully used to bring her dogs over to the elementary school where we played kickball and so on. To get them socialized. Mm-hmm. And I fell in love with this buff bitch that she had, followed her home after school, and learned more about the Cockers. I'd always been into animals, but this was my first opportunity to be with a purebred one. And the rest of the story is I got involved in Cockers. Got a black bitch from her, did fairly well, but like I said, it was the heyday of Cockers, and it took a ton of them for a major. Yeah. I think I got 16 or 17 points on this little black bitch, but I couldn't get the majors. So she was bred, and as time went on, I worked at a lot of kennels, Airedale Kennel, Cocker Kennel, and so on. And down the road from the Airedale Kennel was a Doberman Kennel. And I went down, and I got into the Dobermans, but out back were these gray dogs. And I said, what are those? And the owner said, those are my hunting dogs. Those are my hunting dogs. Okay, what do they hunt? Bear. And he was using them on bear in the dismal swamp of Virginia and North Carolina. I got a baby puppy that was part of a large litter that was going to be, unfortunately, in those days, bucketed. And she is behind every elk hound I've ever had since.
Oh, my God. I totally have goosebumps. That is awesome. That is amazing. And so that was some time ago, right? And we've seen some things change.
Oh, yeah.
Some things change. So talk to me a little bit.
More than 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about some of the changes you've seen, the good ones and the bad ones.
Well, for one thing, in those days on these rural roads, people that had some acreage could house dogs. Mm-hmm. They didn't have anybody knocking on their doors to take the head count. They could raise dogs and run dogs and do what they wanted to do. Today, I think there are a lot of obstacles in the way of people having breeding stock and housing mm-hmm. sufficient numbers of dogs to make great improvements. So I think that, the legislation, the cost of doing business, mm-hmm. all of it are, shall we say, barriers we have to overcome if we're going to keep the purebred dog alive and well.
Right. And, you know, a lot of people have said and talked about the idea of the big kennels. And that these people had 100 dogs, a lot of them.
I went to a lot of kennels in my youth with 100 dogs.
Right.
And I went to the Dachshund, Cleetle Dachshund Kennel, John Cook. He had over 100 dachshunds. Lena Basquette, famous old gal, wonderful, showgirl mm-hmm. and handler, and later judge. Lena housed 100 Danes on her property in Chalfont, Pennsylvania. And each Dane, it was previously a horse farm, each Dane had its own box stall and run out.
And I think about that in today's society. And if you say to someone today, oh, I have 100 dogs, they're going to have a cow. You know, they're going to not know what to do with that. Never mind the government, the people, the exhibitors. You know, we have such a narrowed idea. And so can we talk about what does that, just actual volume, what does the ability to maintain significant numbers, like you said, what does that give you?
Well, first of all, you have to have the help to do it. So that means you have to be well-financed and you have to have resources. And secondly, a lot of these kennels, we're talking the late 40s, early 50s, and maybe a little longer, a lot of those kennels were doing some wonderful things in that they were bringing in breeding stock from all over the world for the new sport of dogs to really catch on. Dog showing was in the hands of the elite and the wealthy prior to World War II. Following World War II, in the 40s, late 40s and 50s and so on, people like me who came from modest means and a background were able to start breeding a few dogs and showing them. And the reason we could do that was these wealthier people had brought in stock and they made it available to all of us. And in those days, you could look at your dog, and if you were able to evaluate it properly, not rose-colored glasses, but, you know, the jaded glasses of an analyzer, evaluator, you could look at your dogs and you could say, okay, I've got a line of dogs going here. This was by the time I graduated from college. They got great running gear. They're beautifully made, but they're light-boned and they don't have enough head. So you could find the kennels in America. At that time, the kennels were on the West Coast, maybe one of the reasons I ended up in California after starting in Virginia. And you could actually know where to go to provide the strengths your dogs lacked. And that was a tremendous asset to young breeders. Today, so many breedings are made randomly. It's hard to find a line of dogs that you can count on to provide their strengths. Maybe they don't even have consistent strengths, you know? But when you find that, as we could in the 60s and so on, it's so valuable to help you move forward in your breeding program. In fact, there was a time that I'd been laying on genes for head and bone. And finally, when Top of the Mark came along in the late 90s, I said to myself, you need to back off of this a little bit. This dog has almost too much head for the breed and almost too much bone. So being able to blend all those ingredients into one package, that's the real thing. When I watch Bobby Flay, I say, he's the real thing. He knows how to put all those ingredients into the recipe and outshine his competitors and challengers.
Well, and I think that you speak there to something that other people have mentioned and has always been part of what I grew up hearing in dogs, is that it's part art and part science.
Truly.
And so take the science piece for me for a minute, because your book is where I learned a lot of what I know. Sorry, but there it is. And
what do you mean, sorry?
Well, I feel like I'm kind of, bowing just a little bit. Talk to us a little bit about breeding on the tail female line, because that's essentially what I've done. I just placed a litter of puppies that is generation 7 all on the tail female line.
Well, I've been doing that for a lot of years, a lot more than seven
more
generations.
Than me.
That's okay. Now, having said that, talk to you about the tail female line.
Give us some really concrete direction. Just so two or three simple...
Just let's describe what it is
first. Okay, beautiful.
All right. There's the tail male line, which is always the sire, his grandsire, always sires at the top of the pedigree. The tail female line is the female at the bottommost part of the pedigree. The dam, her dam's dam, and so on. We have received guidance from the world of thoroughbred horses on this, because those people have really studied to get where they are today, with these beautiful animals that can run so fast, and we always want them sound too. And those people have published a lot of things on that. I used a lot of that in my youth to help me move forward in deciding my breeding decisions, okay? Now, first of all, let's just look at it. Every dog has an X chromosome, all right? That comes from the egg of his dam or her dam. Not every dog has a Y chromosome. Only the males have a Y chromosome. It's my personal belief that the X chromosome carries significantly more information on it than the Y chromosome. And then when you consider the condition of the bitch when you breed her, the nurturing of her puppies, and so on, I think it's safe to say that the bitch gives a lot more to the progeny than the sire. In fact, I joke sometimes, what's the sire good for? Producing the sperm that wiggles its way up to the egg. That's what he's good for. He's good for the next generation. Chuck gets a little out of shape sometimes when I mention this. But anyhow, and then there's another wild card in the mix, which is called mitochondria. Only the female carries it, but she can give it to both her sons and her daughters. Now, the mitochondria is kind of like what you might call the energy battery of the whole entity. It's what makes Sammy run. All right? And having said that, what I'm going to say here might be controversial, I don't know, but we don't think, we know scientifically it's passed to the sons of the bitch, but he can't pass it on. It's a dead end there. But it's also passed to the daughters of a producing dam, and she can pass it on to her own daughters and so on. So when you get to the next generation, that's your valid reason for treasuring the tail female line right up the way. And for example, in her female line, she's got a bitch called Marguerite that's on the bottom of the female line. And Marguerite's out of a Marquetta daughter, and Marquetta and Sarah and so on. All of those bitches were strong. They were active. What do we think the bitch gives her puppies? We don't know if it comes through the X chromosome aside from mitochondria or whatever, but we think that the bitch puts heart and temperament and so on into the progeny. When I was doing that book, I interviewed some people that do have big kennels. There are some people with big kennels, but they're hound people. They're the people that have a kennel of foxhounds with 100 dogs in them, wealthy people in the Atlanta area and so on. And when I did this research, I also was able to work with a pointer breeder, Bill Whaley, who was of great fame, and he housed a lot of dogs. And so I interviewed these gentlemen. I said, what do you think the bitches put into the progeny that the sires don't? Heart, run, endurance, stamina. And when you put all of those things in a package of a working animal, obviously the tail female line has a lot to give. What do you think the dog gives, the sire? Well, he may give plushness, he may give brilliance, he may get in the world of horses or hounds speed. But we don't want so much speed that the hounds are outrunning the horse. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. When they're at the chase on a fox hunt. So there are all these things that go into the final package, but I treasure my bitches. I treasure them. They're the heroes of the breeding program.
I completely agree with you, and your advice to breeders on that, I took entirely to heart. Moving forward then, giving, again, we were trying to always give specific goals and ideas for people to work with. Talk to people about your shopping for a foundation bitch.
I didn't shop.
No, I'm saying a person could, was is shopping for a foundation bitch.
Well, I mean, I just lucked into this bitch from hunting stock, and it took me a lot of, I wouldn't advise anybody to do what I did because it took me like 20 years to move forward from her.
Yeah.
But she's still in all their pedigree. So you want to know what someone that has studied and really knows where they want to go.
Yes.
All right. The question is, how do they shop for a bitch?
What are they looking for? When they're buying a foundation bitch, what types of things are they looking for in a foundation bitch, both for a breeder of the foundation bitch, what's behind that bitch, consistency, all of those things?
Well, they got to do a lot of homework. They got to know the soundness factor, the health issues, the balance of soundness and type, which is that old argument, which is more important, soundness or type? They are. Form and function. Form is the type the breed evolved into to do the job it was desired for it to do. And function is the ability to do it. Call it soundness, call it what you want. In my personal opinion, I think that pedigree, health records, temperament, quality of type, and then has this been a producing family or is this bitch I'm looking at hoping to buy for a foundation bitch, is she a sport different from her family? So I think several of those things would factor in, and you just have to weigh them. But you also have to let whatever breeder you're seeking, this foundation bitch, know you're for real. You're not going to come along and breed her to this dog you've had that isn't of her quality, and you don't want to breed her down. And bottom line is that you have to convince the breeders that you're for real. And that you want to protect this breed and keep it pure in the future so future generations will have the same right and privilege to enjoy the breed that you've had.
I think that's excellent. Okay, so moving on, we're going to switch from breeding on to the next topic for you, which is going to be talking about owner handling. Now, I know, you know, certainly you judge now, but you are still showing
some
your own
question there.
Well, yeah, I didn't say judge good or bad. I said you are judging. But I think that it's really important that you are also continuing to show your dogs. And that is, you know, well, there are people who disagree with it.
Mm-hmm. I get a lot of criticism mm-hmm. for that.
But nonetheless, you were very successful as an owner-handler for a lot of years. And I think that you offer people kind of an idol. So I want you to, well, I think for a lot of owner-handlers, they should look at you as an idol. And so I want you to give them some ideas, some suggestions, some encouragement to how to be a really incredibly successful owner-handler.
Well, one of the first things that I always notice, you have 2 minutes plus for your dog to be evaluated. And yet some owner-handlers will kind of not get into the ring in a timely fashion, which is already taking time away from their allotted slot in the ring. So always be ready to get in the ring on time. Mm-hmm. Always. Mm-hmm. Okay? Learn how to use bait, not abuse bait. When you're scattering bait all over the ring, when your dog is not, let's say your dog isn't trained. Lots of times we see these dogs in the ring and the owner or handler or whatever, exhibitor. The exhibitor is shoving food down their throat because that's the only way they can keep their attention so the dog will accept the examination. So I say try to avoid that. School your dog. Train your dog. School your dog. Many times when it's a close call, the best schooled dog that's prepared and understands its job description gets the call. Having said yes. that, those are a couple of things I would say. Now, over the years I used to hear people, this is long before I ever judged. I probably wouldn't have judged if I hadn't married Chuck Trotter, okay? And having said that, over the years I heard people say they always get beat by the pros. They can't beat the pros. Truly, handling dogs is a learned skill. You don't have to be a natural world-class athlete to handle a dog. So if you go to classes, if you get the right training, you go to the right people, you read the right books, etc., you can learn to do a creditable job of showing your dog. You have a lot of advantages over the pros. You have all this time you can spend with one dog, or two, or whatever. They have to spread their time over several dogs. And I've always felt that some of the animosity on the part of owner-handlers against professionals is not fair. Some of the people that helped me the most when I was young were professional handlers. When my vagabond dog was top dog all breeds in 1970, the two people that helped me the most in determining things I should do to improve were Frank Sabella and Ricky Kazudian. And of course, they were competing against me every weekend in those days. So I don't think we should think of it as them and us, as owner-handlers.
Thank you.
We're all in it together, and that's what we should do. We should learn how to groom our breed properly. We should learn how to present it properly, and so on, and go from there, you know?
I agree 100%. Thank you. And so then the next piece of the puzzle for you, because you are an accomplished lady, is talking about judging. And I have heard you say before that judging was not really your calling, that that was something you came to with Chuck. But I think you enjoy it. You seem to enjoy it.
Oh, I love it when I get good dogs. Yeah. It's so fun.
Right.
Yeah.
And so talk to us about that. Talk to us about the joy of judging. Where do you find your joy as a judge?
Well, you have to understand that when you're a breeder, you're evaluating dogs all the time. Every time you decide this bitch is worthy to put in my gene pool, and you pick a sire to take her to, and then you evaluate the litter to decide which ones, if any, should be kept for the next generation, you're judging dogs. Now, having said that, you want me to tell you what I look for as a judge?
No,
or what?
I want you to talk about what you enjoy.
What I enjoy.
What you enjoy when you go in that ring.
I enjoy people that bring dogs into the ring, and they're enjoying it, because that's contagious. It's really contagious. I enjoy the fact that maybe I can help in some small way to get a novice exhibitor hooked and help them so they can make one step forward and then another. So those are some of the things I enjoy.
I'm going to tell a story on you now that you might not even remember, but it has stayed with me for years. You were judging in the Northwest. You were judging a ring of Vizslas. And I was standing there waiting for my turn to go in the ring next. And so I watched all of this. And you were very frustrated with this young lady who couldn't get her dog to gait properly without pacing. And in complete violation of all the rules, you took the dog away from her and ran it around the ring. to show her how to make it go properly.
Please then... don't tell that to the kids.
I don't think they care at this point. It was many years ago. And then you saw me standing there and you said, you come in here and show this dog for this lady. It's okay. But I think that is one of the things that stands out in my mind because it's what made me love you. Because you do care about the dogs and you do care about the exhibitors. And so that's the kind of thing that I would like to talk a little more about.
Well, sometimes when I get a dog in there and I can see this is a potentially great one and it's being mishandled and so on, and it's pacing, like you say, and I never get to see it move, I will make that exhibitor move that dog till I'm satisfied that it's doing it right. And one lady one time said to me, I can't do this again. I said, why not? She said, because my baby's due next week. And I hadn't even noticed that she was pregnant. I was so busy looking at
this dog. That's terrible.
I said, oh, my God, why didn't you say something? She said... She said, I was trying to be a good sport.
So finding those great dogs, can you think of some over the years that have stayed with you? Some of the dogs that you've judged?
You want to know some of the great dogs I've judged.
That you saw early on and said,
oh, well, I don't know if I always know which dogs I saw early on that I loved or the ones that come on later.
I didn't know if you remembered any of them.
Yeah, well, I do a few. One of the best dogs I ever judged I got early on in my career, I guess, as a judge, if I've had a career as a judge, was an English Setter Bitch from Canada. And I did their national, and this bitch just bowled me over. And I had already seen, this was a orange and white bitch, orange Belton, and I'd already seen a blue Belton that a famous handler from Canada had, seen her at Westminster, and I loved her. And I just ended up with these two bitches, and the bitch's name, I'll never forget it, Poetry in Motion. And I loved that bitch. I want to say, I grew up in the days of Rock Falls Colonel. And Bill Holt, the owner, breeder, handler of Rock Falls Colonel, one of the first two dogs to win 100 best in shows in the days when nobody showed a dog more than 30, 40 times a year, were Colonel and Bangaway, the boxer. Anyhow, Mr. Holt was a Virginian gentleman. He was just the most beautiful man. He was just fabulous. And I'll never forget when I was about 16 or 18, whatever. One day he said, I'm really busy. Would you foo-foo Colonel for me? Now, foo-foo was a powder that you put on the dogs to clean them. It's not around today. And I was, that was the biggest thrill I ever had, getting to foo-foo this dog. And
I love that.
Yeah. And anyhow, I don't know for sure if Poetry in Motion was any kin to that dog. Probably if you went back far enough, it would have been. But when I saw that bitch, I got this, wow, this, you know, electricity went through me like little tingles or something. Oh my God, it's almost a female version of Colonel.
Oh.
And I put her best at breed and I put the other one first award of merit. I just loved them. That's a bitch that, she's always remained with me. So, you know, I've seen a lot of great dogs over the years and I think there's some really top animals out right now. Another dog that threw me when I judged it was Mick, the Kerry Blue. And a soft-coated Wheaton, oh boy, what was his name? The Carusi gal had him.
I loved that dog.
They had the running gear, they had the length of neck, the shoulder, the front assembly, return of upper arm, strong rib cage, short loin. So, you know, all those things in a package. I really loved those two dogs. So those are just a few that jump out at me.
That is spectacular. So, Pat, today we don't have the 100 dog kennels.
Right.
So we got smaller people working with a whole lot smaller footprint. What are some of your ideas or recommendations for breeders today, average, regular, run-of-the-mill breeders today, who are trying to make forward progress with their breeding program with fewer numbers and still be able to put a stamp of type and excellence on their dogs?
It requires you to do a lot of homework because those dogs are scattered all over. And don't go thinking every 100 dog kennel produce the greatest dogs. The ladies of the English countryside with their small programs have bred some of the great dogs of the world for the last 100 years. There weren't any Elkhound kennels. There was one Elkhound kennel that had a lot of dogs, but the other Elkhound kennels were small. And you just have to go seek out. First, you have to make it your business to learn. You know, if you don't learn how to evaluate a dog through your mentors and so on and your studies, how are you ever going to know what to try to correct and what to try to keep? So that's a large part of it. As far as the big kennels go, yes, I think their disappearance and lines of dogs per se mean that strengths are more scattered in the gene pools, as are weaknesses. So I think the numbers of consistent type are more difficult to find in many instances. I guess I could say in my lifetime and in my breed, the high point of this show career thing and breeding quality animals was probably the 60s and 70s and into the 80s. And then in the last, say, since 1989, 90, whatever, we have seen a weakening of the strength of the dogs in the ring. One year on the Calor circuit, the old Calor circuit, we used to call the Death March.
I lived in Roseburg. I went to it every year.
Yeah. We had what were to become three best in show dogs in the Norwegian Elkhound Open dog class. And when you think about that,
wow,
you know, those were great dogs. So as far as the loss of the big kennels, I mourn them, but I don't think they necessarily mean we can't progress. There are a lot of really intelligent, well-learned, and wise breeders in a lot of breeds. It's just your job to seek them out. And you have to be sure that you don't let people that are negative talk you out of these good dogs because they resent them winning or, you know, all the emotional things that go on with people that own dogs. I mean, I've known people that I loved, and you could say anything against their spouse, and they didn't care. But if you, they said, what do you think of my dog? And you tell them, they go bonkers. You know, you should never ask a person what they think of your dog unless you're prepared to work with that opinion.
And hear the answer. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, I try not to encourage that negativity part. I like the positive. Tell me what you like about this dog. Yeah.
So as a wrap-up, talk to us a little bit about any, and I ask every guest this, everybody talks about this. So this is, I'm looking for everyone to talk about what are ideas for the future. What can we do to keep this sport positive?
We do not reach out to the public. We're putting on dog shows for ourselves, for each other. Two good examples of that, one in the West, Vallejo, one in the East, Springfield. And they have dog shows over and over and over and over. Kennels grew up in the old days in a town, and people in that town that had dogs and loved dogs got involved in the kennel clubs. They went to the dog shows. They brought in the public. I mean, let's take Springfield as an example. How many people do you think in Springfield would go to dog shows anymore? They have them every weekend, just about. So it's very hard to get local people to buy into it. So we've lost the local people that might be willing to come to dog shows because we're not making it possible to reach out to them and bring them in. And I think in many ways we've dropped the ball on that. In the old days when I had more time available, I used to take litters of puppies to all the elementary schools, and my principal, I was teaching, you know, junior high, they would give me time off to do that because it was considered an educational experience for the kids. And the teachers loved it, the kids loved it. In fact, whenever we had one that didn't make it, but it was a wonderful dog, and it, you know, it made its championship, but it needed to be moved on. I had a constant, ever-changing source of potential owners of pets.
Perfect.
One time, Derek Rain said to me, you know what? There are more Elkhounds in Carmel than there are in Oslo. But anyhow, the bottom line is we need to reach out to the public. And you know who's reaching out to the public? People developing commercials. We see dogs on commercials all the time. And many of them appear bred. But yet, we're not reaching out to the communities. Maybe we could send a free coupon to admit you and your family to the dog show. Maybe we could have a day, hey, bring your teenager over and we'll have something similar to your $2 in the ring idea. We can give them a well-schooled, trained dog and let them try to show it in the ring. Give them a ribbon.
I love that.
Yeah, think about this. If you get on a horse that's been trained and you've never been on a horse and it gives you a comfortable ride and you have a positive experience, you might want to get into horses. I just think we're not doing enough to bring the public in.
I love that.
And we need to reach out. We really do, before it's too late.
Yeah, I definitely think that you have a really good idea right there. Okay, well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so very, very much for
Thank you,
spending
Laura.
Time with us.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.